Good to see everyone tonight. We did not make it Sunday evening, and I heard there were many as well who did not. I'll just explain a little bit, but we were getting the warnings in the city. I work for Green, so I still get them at my house, being an employee there. But we sent out phone calls, text messages as well, and I was getting them, and I actually heard sirens going on outside. But it's okay, because I'll still drive, we'll still make it, and we were in the garage, and the boys were right behind me in Augusta, and all of a sudden, the trees going really hard, and then there was just like this white wall of hail and rain. And I said, it reminds me of when we open the fire hose, it's just that spray, and that's what it looked like. I hit the garage real quick. I said, get into the basement, and we ran down there. We lost power. Our power was out. That was about 5:15, and around 11:15, it came back, 11:15, because Joe actually texted me. We had gone away. So somewhere around 11:15, the power came back on, and I know some people had it even later that they had their power off until then, I should say. So I'm glad, hopefully no one was hurt, everyone was safe. And it was just today in the news, an article that I saw, The Path, which I didn't know there's an F0, because it depends on the winds, but it went from Canal Fulton kind of through our allotment, the backside, up into Green. But again, just something to think about. We all need to be aware, be careful of what we're doing. So tonight, for the class, I want to talk about, it's probably going to sound like an odd subject, but I want to talk about a corpse, dead bodies. And I've used some of this before. Actually, I've used this lesson. This is Gene Taylor. He's held a couple meetings here with us before, and one of his outlines, and I've used it before in a lesson, and I've kind of not really changed it, but I want to use it for a class. I had some other notes to go along with it because I wanted to have some discussion. Actually, I was standing up there. I thought I better come down here, that way we can have some more discussion, because I left a page sitting with some other notes in there. But it's a subject, and then I thought, I don't want to talk about that. People are going to get upset. But we've all dealt with losing loved ones, and we've dealt with dead bodies. His lesson is actually entitled The Autopsy of a Dead Body. So I want to talk about that just a little bit. I've unfortunately dealt with it at work. And many of you have as well in the medical fields. And you don't really get used to it. The first time or so, it's a little stressful, a little shocking. And you don't get used to it because it's something we don't like to think about. Death is something, the last things we want to think about. No one, hopefully, doesn't enjoy or raise their hand and say, I want to think about death. Unfortunately, in some sense, it does happen. There was something in the news I just saw today, and there was I guess some breaking news. There was some teenage girl who was, I think their words were, obsessed, thought about the Columbine shootings and wanted to carry something out. And I believe, I didn't see the full story, but that she had taken her own life somewhere. They had closed schools and were looking for her. But for the well-thinking person, the Christian especially, any of us, we don't like to really think about, in a certain sense, death. Now, we think about it in the sense, I should say, let me back up, I'm backtracking, going in a circle here. We think about it because we're, in a sense, we're living towards our death in the right way. So, again, we don't want to be around a dead body. It's not a comfortable thing. But there are some things that we can learn from a corpse. I wanted to, I think Augusta went with me, I went to, it used to be called NeoUCOM, it's NeoMed. I thought about going to medical school until I saw the price. And then I was going to go in the military and have them pay for it. Anyways, I took a day, had an orientation at NeoUCOM, NeoMed. And you sat and you talked with someone. Well, then they took you around the campus there. And one of the things was they took me downstairs to where someone was doing, what's the word I'm going to say? What is it? Autopsy. Yeah, an autopsy. They were, working on a corpse that was down there. And I've actually had the chance in my job. I went to Baltimore a few years ago, and one of the classes I took was that very thing. You kind of learn some procedures and learn some things in there. So there are some things that can be learned from it. And I don't want to go into detail on what we did, but we removed organs, we did some things, and you actually learned. I actually learned something very valuable that I took back to work And we have a doctor who works with our department. I talked with him about it, and we actually did a new procedure from learning something. So there are things that we can learn, I guess, from a corpse, and we need to take that in mind. Now, here's some facts about a corpse. And again, I know this is going to sound odd, and I have done this lesson before, but a corpse never realizes it's dead. Right? I know it sounds odd, sounds weird. And in our society today, unfortunately, one thing I forgot to mention too, when people talk about corpses, they talk about dead. For some reason, zombies are very popular today. Every time you turn the TV, you look, you do anything, there's something, movies, there's something with zombies. And I don't know what that is. And I was going to mention that back when we talked about our kind of infatuation for some people with death. But you can't get past it when people are just trying to think about zombies. But a corpse, in reality, doesn't realize that it is dead. And the second thing with that, a corpse doesn't do anything on its own initiative. It doesn't take it upon itself to do anything. Now, I'm setting up some things when I'm talking about this, so we'll get to some other points in just a minute here. But remember this, again, a corpse doesn't realize it's dead, and a corpse can't do anything on its own. Again, so whatever happens to that corpse when someone passes away to that body, it's whatever happens to the funeral home, the doctors, whether there's an autopsy done on that there, it just lies there. It doesn't do anything. Again, contrary to what TV, movies, everything else do, it cannot happen. And as I just said that, I remember there was I saw a prank one time where someone pretended there was a new employee working down at a morgue, and someone pretended they were, and then all of a sudden they would jump up and scare this person. And it's funny if you're watching it. It's not so funny for that employee that's down there. So it just lies there. The other part is that he has here is that everyone speaks well of a corpse. When you go to any funeral, you go to a funeral home, you go to visiting hours, have you ever been, and maybe you have, I never have, have you ever been to one where someone said, yeah, they were just a horrible person? They were just terrible. And talks bad about them, says how everything they did was... No, there's a sense of decency and decorum where everyone's comments are positive, right? They were great. They were well-respected. He or she was such a good person. Whatever it may be, everyone has positive comments about them. And why? Because people... Well, why is that? Why are the comments so positive then at that time? What is it? Sorry. For the living, respect, right? Yeah, because you're trying to be respectful. Why else? People don't, and again, this has to do with respect. No one wants to hurt someone else's feelings. No one wants to be the bad guy. And again, I would say in that situation, that's probably not even the time to do that there as well. You don't want to talk bad about a person. Yeah, he was a good person, but let me tell you the times he did this or that. It's just that would be a very awkward time and conversation. The other thing with a corpse is that the effects of embalming are temporary. You know, we use an embalming method to keep that body from further decay, I guess is the best way to put it in there. So there's some applications we can take then when we talk about a corpse. When we talk about a dead body, I think there are some, and Brother Taylor here has it written, and there's some great points in here. But the first is us as individuals. If we think about ourselves, what are some ways where we may be like a corpse? In our Christianity, and how, Matt? Okay. What does it mean? What does it mean to you to be a Christian? I'm putting you back on the spot again. Sorry. Okay. So practicing an obedient faith. Great. It's not enough that, and I've used the analogy of a letterman's jacket, that when we walk in this door, and I know you've heard me say this before, if I walk in this door and I just put on a jacket and it says C for a Christian, or it says a Christian on my back, and all of us wear one when we come in this building. But what happens when we leave the building? Are we still wearing that quote-unquote jacket? Is it still with us? Or did we leave it somewhere else? Are we a different person when we leave this building than we are when we leave the building than we are when we're sitting in here? The other thing that I always think about are seat warmers. How many seat warmers do we have here tonight? Raise your hand. No, you don't have to raise your hand. And I joke about that, but it's a serious thing. If we're coming here just so we can get our marks on the attendance sheet that I was here, that's a bigger problem. Look with me in 1 Timothy chapter 5. And let's actually look at verse 1. The verse I want to get to is a little bit lower. Let's start at verse 1. 1 Timothy 5, verse 1. It says, "Do not rebuke an older man, but encourage him as you would a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, in all purity. Honor widows who are truly widows. But if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. She who is truly a widow, left all alone, has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day." And this is the point I want to get to here. It says then in verse 6, "But she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives." And that's where many people don't realize that even though their eyes are open, even though they're awake, even though they're walking around, that spiritually, physically they're alive. Spiritually, they're dead. It kind of reminds me of the point, and I say this, and I mean this, that if you walk around many places and you just look into people's eyes, it's as if you can see it. I can't read minds. I can't predict the future. But you walk around and you see people just with this stare that there's nothing else in this world that matters to them except for what bar they're going to go to this weekend with their friends, what concert they're going to go to, how many things they have, how many cars they own, how much money they have, what style of clothes that they have. And you can see this, I think, in their faces, that there's nothing else in the world. How many people, I'll tell you the biggest thing is, it's this. How many times you drive by cars and you see someone like this or down like this? There's not a thought or care for anything else that's going on right now except for what's on here. And this is an analogy too, because this just, to me, this is, and we all use it, but it's the world. There's more important things. What happened when Matt started driving? They didn't have cell phones and text messaging. That wasn't until later with us. Now, I remember he had a bag phone in his car there too. But everyone's distracted by everything that's going on in the world today. And spiritually, people are dead. Look with me in Acts chapter 4. And in verse 12. It says, "There is salvation in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved." So do people look more upon God or upon the world today? In 2 Peter chapter 1, in verse 5. 2 Peter 1 and verse 5 beginning, "For this reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, knowledge with self-control, self-control with steadfastness, steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For whoever lacks these qualities is so nearsighted that he is blind, having forgotten that he was cleansed from his former sins. Therefore, brothers, be all the more diligent to confirm your calling and election. For if you practice these qualities, you will never fall. For in this way, there will be richly provided for you an entrance into the eternal kingdom of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So there are a few things that stick out in these verses to me. Obviously, what we must do, the things we have to do. And then when it talks about all these qualities in verses 5 through 7, it says that they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful in the knowledge. Now, what happens at work if you're ineffective? What happens at work if you're not getting the job done, if you're not doing it? What will happen? They're going to give you a raise. You're going to get promoted. That's what happens where I work. No, that's not recorded. So what happens if we're not effective in our jobs? You get fired. You're let go. You're not. At some point, if you continue to be ineffective, if you continue to not do what you're supposed to do, the one thing I think about too a lot of times, sales. Right? A lot of salespeople work on commission. Their income is dependent upon how good they are at their job and what they're doing. If they don't sell something, they're not going to make anything. But again, we think about us as Christians, if we don't have these qualities, we're going to be ineffective. We're going to be unfruitful. Who wants to be called ineffective? Who wants to be called unfruitful? But this is the exact idea. What he talks about here is that many people don't realize that they are. Many people don't realize that spiritually, they're that corpse. Spiritually, they're dead. Our eyes can be open. I guess this is where, and I'll backtrack again, this is where we're zombies then. That we're sitting here with our eyes open. We're sitting here talking. We're sitting here driving down the road. But spiritually, we're not alive. Spiritually, we're dead. And the next point is that many do nothing on their own initiative. It takes someone else doing something for you. And what can that mean for us as Christians? Let me back up. Did anyone have any comments on the last point I had too? Again, about we don't realize we're spiritually dead. I meant to ask something there. So again, the next point is that many people won't do anything upon their own. Many people won't do anything on their own initiative. Now, there's nothing wrong with what we choose to do. Some people choose different careers. Some people choose different things. Some people want to be entrepreneurs. They want to invent things. They want to be very successful. The one trait they have in common is it's not that someone's telling them what to do and they do it. They jump and they do it. They start things. They have that initiative to want to do something. But us as Christians, it's even more important. And if we just wait for someone to do something, let's say, well, what if tonight? I'll use an example. What if tonight Don's not here and we're all sitting here? What if I just stayed in my seat? Well, who's going to teach? Eventually, someone I know would have stood up and done something. But in our lives as Christians, we have to take the initiative. Matthew 5 and verse 19, Christ here says that whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same thing will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be great in the kingdom of heaven. Do we not just take what we listen to tonight? Are we not just going to sit here, or will we just sit here and listen and think that's enough? That's all I need to do. Now, when this word here is talking about us teaching, when Christ says, if we're not going to take that, we're not going to teach it, who's he talking to? Really, who's he talking to in the sense of what we're reading here? He's talking to all of us. He's talking to Christians. That if we don't take this word, we don't go out unto others and teach it unto them as well, then what will happen? this was the same thought that I had a discussion in a class not too long ago, is whose responsibility is it then to teach? Everyone's, right? We all have that responsibility. Because if we all are the seat warmers, if we all sit here, we all don't say anything, what's going to happen? Nothing. At work, if we just sit there, we don't do anything, what's going to happen? Yeah, again, we're going to get fired. That's serious. And we won't, I can't say we won't do that, because we're at work, we're going to do something. But if we just sit there and we don't do anything, we know there's a grave consequence to it. It's not easy to find jobs. It's not easy to find work. So we don't take it very lightly. Is it easy being a Christian? No. In a sense, it's easy to become one, but we have to continue. We have to fight in there as well. In Matthew chapter 11, beginning in verse 28, we're all familiar with this verse, and Christ says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." What does it mean to take a yoke? What do you think of when you hear that? What's that? Yeah, an oxen and work, right? I think of work. Is that an easy thing, do you think, to do? Is it something light? Well, he talks about, though, that it is light. It is easy. And a lot of that, too, talks about our mindset, where we're at, what we're thinking of. Work can be hard. Work is hard. Do we want to work? Do we want to take initiative? Or do we want to do something about it? I know Matt and Kevin and I, we teach down at Waco, and one of the classes we were talking about faith recently, Matt brought it up even Sunday. And turn with me to James chapter 2 real quick here. Because when I was thinking about work, I was thinking this thing, this very same thing in here. Matthew chapter 2, or did I say Matthew? James chapter 2. James chapter 2. And I want to begin in verse 14. "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but he does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and be filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Someone will say, 'You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works.' You believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Do you want to be shown, you foolish person, that faith apart from works is useless? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, 'Abraham believed God, and it is counted to him as righteousness, and he was called a friend of God.' You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way?" And this is the point right here, verse 26. "For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead." So, and I brought this in this study tonight because we were talking about this very point a few weeks ago, faith and works, and I said you can sum everything up in verse 26 because it's easy for us to see, right? It's easiest. The body apart from the spirit is what? It's dead. It's that body. So faith apart from works is dead. And going back to the original subject of even our study tonight, when we talk about a corpse and we talk about a body, you want, and you understand it. There are times, and especially with loved ones, we don't want to believe it. We don't want to trust that that's what has happened, that they are gone. They're no longer in that body. They're no longer there. And it's a tough thing. It's a hard thing. So we realize that, right? We understand that. That's a corpse now. It's nothing, unfortunately, it's a sad thing, but it's nothing more. That body cannot do anything anymore. We understand that. For the body apart from the spirit is dead. But for some reason, and again, this is another lesson in and of itself, but that faith apart from works is also dead. But the point I want to use tonight is the fact that we have to work. We have to do something. We have to take initiative, or else what is going to happen? Imagine again, okay, so I said earlier about raise your hand if you're the seat warmers. You don't have to raise your hand. If we are, we know it. But let's say that's okay week in and week out. We come here, we just sit. Nothing happens. We don't do anything. What then? Where will we be at tomorrow? Where will we be next week? And if we don't do anything, if we don't take that initiative, we're dead. In Titus chapter 2, we read, who gave himself for us, talking of Christ here, to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are what? What does the last part of this say? Zealous for good works. Okay, so what's zealous for something? What does it mean to be zealous? What's that? On fire. Yeah. That's a good example. On fire. Think about something that you're zealous about. Think of something you like to do. When I wanted to do, you know, maybe put something in my car, I don't go and just grab any part and I'll just put it on there. Well, I'm missing a lug on my wheel, on my tire here. I'll put a coat hanger together and keep that on there. First, is that going to keep that wheel on there? No, it's not going to be good. Okay, here's a better example. Let's talk about tires and wheels. And when I was younger, that's what I used to do, tires and batteries at Sears. And what do you have to do when you tighten down lugs? You have to torque them. And what does that mean? Tighten to a certain, right, to a certain specification. And what happens if you don't do that? Yeah, someone said it could fall off, it could be loose, it's not going to run right. So we don't want to, in our own, maybe someone else would maybe just not torque it and think, I'm just going to tighten it down. That can work. But is it always going to work? Is it going to be good? No, it's not going to be good. We're going to take the time and effort to do it. As our lives as Christians, though, do we put that same effort into it, into everything? I'm not saying you have to sit here and tell me, no, I'm not doing it. But think upon ourselves that if I'm not zealous for good works, if I don't want to push myself and do those things, then where will I be as a Christian? Am I going to be better? Am I going to be happy? Maybe that's the other question. Am I going to be happy as a Christian? Because again, I'll go back to if we're just sitting here because we're warming a seat, because I want the attendance, I'm supposed to be here, I'm only allowed X number of missing days. No, and that's not it. Which is, again, and I'll just say, it's not why we even take attendance here. It's because if someone is missing, then we could reach out to them, find them. Because we care. But as Christians, do we care? Do we want to follow him? And are we doing everything we can when we're supposed to? Look, Romans chapter 12 real quick too. What did I say? Chapter 12? And at verse 11, Romans 12 and in verse 11, it says, do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. That almost sounds, what's the word, an oxymoron? The do not be slothful in zeal. They're two opposite things. And I think, too, of don't just say I'm going to do something and not do it, not follow through with it. In Romans, or excuse me, go down to verse 2. I said I left some notes, and I tried to remember and write them down real quick what was in my head, and I just lost it here. Excuse me. I was pretty sure I was still in Romans chapter 12 here. Okay, I lost my point, and I apologize. But again, it had to do with zeal as well, and now I can't remember and I want to find it. But again, when we talk, don't be slothful in zeal. Don't just assume something is going to happen. When we want to do it, do it. Put your mind to it. Put everything you can do, especially as Christians. Brother Taylor.
I can talk about all this. It goes back all the way to the beginning. I just look back over in Genesis 2, Adam and Eve. They had everything going for them. We do too. We have everything going. They didn't listen to what God had told them. And look what, and it's in verse 17 where he said, but if you eat of the knowledge of good and evil, well, let me just read.
Sure.
But from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat from it, you will surely die. Now we know that that wasn't a physical death, but they were separated from God. That's what happened. And that's what happens to us. So it's always been that way. They had a choice.
Right.
To make.
Right.
And they made the choice. And it cost them, according to this verse, at least then, I don't know what happened. That's between them and God. But they were separated because they were disobedient. As I said, I thought about Christian and Mary. How we have everything going. And then we heard the situation with them last week.
Right.
And we think about how we have these horrible situations, you know. We don't even know what horrible situations are. We're blessed with an opportunity to learn the truth. We learn it, and then Adam and Eve knew it. They knew what God expected of them. But
and God told them there were consequences.
Right.
To, if you don't follow what I tell you.
And that's what you're saying tonight.
Right.
Consequences to everything that we do, basically.
Right. You can choose, and I know I had this conversation plenty of times with people who say, well, I can do whatever I want to do. I have the choice, and I have the freedom. And absolutely, I said the same thing. You can do what you want. But there's going to be a consequence to what you do, whether it's good or bad. We are going to have to answer for that. And you're absolutely right. Adam and Eve had to answer. They were even told specifically there was a consequence for what they did. And that's why I always use going back to work. Everyone knows that if I just don't show up to work, I'm not going to be able just to skip the rest of this week or next week and then show up a couple weeks later, go do what I'm supposed to be doing, just show up, and do you think they're going, oh, you're back, great, and give you a hug?
Another situation, the rich man and Lazarus.
Absolutely.
There's another lesson. Yep. We know all these, but sometimes, I don't know if we forget or just don't care or what it is, but we do have a choice. We always have a choice. Even until once we're dead, the choices are gone.
Absolutely. And we then can't fix those things. We can't change those choices that we've already made. While we're alive, and as Brother Taylor said, once we're dead, we can't fix that. We can't change it. But while we're alive, while we're here now, we can change it and we can do something. And we want to do something. We should do it as well. The next point, does anyone else have any points in here? I know I have just a few minutes. I want to get on to this. So the first part he talked about was about individuals. But what about of congregations, of churches themselves? Do we maybe forget that or not think about that? In Revelation chapter 3, and again here, this kind of talks about different of the churches here, and talks about here to the church in Sardis. And in verse 1 here of Revelation 3, it says, "And to the angel of the church in Sardis write, the words of him who had the seven spirits of God and the seven stars, I know your works, You have the reputation, Christ here says, of being alive, but you're dead. Wake up and strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have not found your works complete in the sight of my God. Remember then what you received and heard. Keep it and repent. If you will not wake up, I will come like a thief, and you will not know at what hour I will come against you. This is a warning to each and every one of us. This is a warning to the churches, not just at Sardis, but also to us in here, that we have to realize that we can't just sit around. We can't just do nothing, because I think this is very powerful. I know your works. You have the reputation of being alive, he says in verse 1, but you are dead. And he starts out verse 2 with, wake up. There is a, I haven't read this book yet. There was a book and someone was telling me, actually I was reading online about it, I should say. And I can't tell you who it is. It's by a retired Navy admiral, and it says, make your bed. But he talks about you starting the day with something so simple, so little, one little act of doing something that will start leading to other things. And again, I don't know. I haven't read the book. But it's, I think, it great reviews. It makes you do something. And then I was trying to think, what about our lives as Christians? Again, wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die. For I have not found your works complete in the sight of my God. He's talking to the church in Sardis, talking to the individuals there. And that's talking to us as well. That, and I've said this before too, we have our same routine. All of us have routines. We're going to go home tonight. We're going to go to bed. We're going to wake up. You know, we might go to work. Some you might wake up a little bit later and just hang out all day. But we have a routine in what we do. And how do we go about that? How do we do it? Well, okay, so Wednesday night we're here. Why are we here? Because this is the time set aside that the elders decide we would meet for a Bible study. Sunday, when we come, are we just coming because it's a routine? And is that why we're doing it? Well, this is what I do. This is where I am. This is where I'm supposed to be. Or is it important to us? Does it mean something to us? Again, I love these three verses here. I know your works. You have the reputation of being alive, but you're dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have not found your works complete in the sight of my God. We all need to take lessons from those bodies, from those corpses that are dead. They can't do anything. Are we walking corpses? And I guess I know I said they don't really exist in the beginning, but are we zombies in a sense there? We're just walking around with nothing in our lives. Time is up, and I thank everyone for your attention tonight.